And this is where they gang up on me, or at least attempt to. We started off this morning. What did I call you? The double D's this morning?
Yeah, or I don't know about that.
D squared, I think.
Well, or at least, sciencey.
At least squared. I don't know which it is. Okay, we've got Demetria.
Yep.
Wave. That thar, as we say back home, is Demetria Mathis.
That's right.
And then the other D down there is Dixie Mullenkoff. They're both from over in the vet college. And what happened was last year, one of their bosses bailed out on them and sent these two folks out to talk to me about a topic. And they did such a better job than he would have. We invited him back. So anyway, I got to abuse everybody in the process. We talked some this morning about this whole business of antimicrobial problems and the whole antibiotic resistance issue that certainly gets a lot of attention in the general press. And I guess, losing my train of thought for a minute here. Anyway, we wanted to maybe talk a little bit about why the people believe or should believe there's a connection between antibiotic use and issues on the farm and transfer to the humans. I mean, what's the big concern there that we have?
Sure. I think the biggest concern is that the antibiotics that we're giving to our livestock species...
It's me. Go ahead.
Okay. ...will be transmitted to us through the food chain. And so that's where the big concern and where a lot of MD or medical doctors have concerns about how much antibiotics we're giving to our livestock and food animal species. And so what we found is that we do indeed see a lot of resistant bacteria that are shared among those two populations. But how the direction of how those antibiotic-resistant bacteria are moving is a little uncertain.
So it's really one of the things we have to start with is the fact that the bugs, as I like to call them, are often the same between critters and, you know, two-legged critters. So that if we develop a resistance to a certain chemistry, if you will, certain antibiotic, it could possibly be a problem controlling in the other side of the equation here. We've got certain antibiotics I know that we're most concerned about, and I don't remember which one of you this morning straightened me out on that. It was probably Dixie, but anyway, the target antibiotics, if you will, that we get most concerned about. Give me a few examples there.
Sure. We're concerned about the antibiotics that we would really know them to hear about them. You know, tetracyclines and sulfas and things like that, cephalosporins, things that are used in both human medicine and in food animal medicine are the ones we're really worried about. Because what we're really talking about is foodborne bacteria. You know, there's other things in human medicine like respiratory bugs and things like that or dermal things that... Right. Food animals have no influence on. I mean, we don't really, most of us don't come in contact with livestock. I mean, folks here, there's a higher percentage, but just general, you know, back in Columbus where we have to spend most of our day, you know, you don't see many farm animals roaming around up there, except maybe on ag campus.
Well, yeah, occasionally I know they get out of the vet hospital. Yeah,
run across the river, makes the news.
Anyway, but that's neither here nor there. I have a solution to this entire problem. We quit using these things. Quit putting these chemicals in my food.
Yeah.
No,
you might not have anything to eat after a while.
Right. So oftentimes when an animal is sick, it is very much appropriate and acceptable to use an antibiotic to treat that animal. And from an animal welfare aspect, I mean, it's good for the animal to be treated. They're not suffering. No. You know, so we're not... It's not that you have to not use antibiotics at all in livestock and food animal production, but we need to just think about how we're using them to make sure it's appropriate and we're getting really the most like bang for that antibiotic that we're giving to our food animals.
Well, I know when I deal with consumers and others, we one of the arguments that come up all the time, well, you're using them all the time in all the critters and et cetera, and it's that subtherapeutic type use that we did either for growth promotion or to build a prevention level in there, and that's really not the norm at this point anyway, anymore. But that's still what the public thinks that we're doing on the farm.
No, we're changing a lot in animal agriculture and trying to use drugs effectively but also judiciously. I mean, we want to keep these antibiotics efficable for, you know, all populations. So we're not using any more growth-promoting antibiotics and things like that. But, you know, to treat illness in livestock, absolutely, we still need to use our antibiotics.
Yeah, I get into situations on occasion where I get pretty upset where somebody, I can't use this to treat because maybe it blows my organic label or do whatever. And I'm sorry, that's, you know, I'm not a veterinarian, but that's not responsible from my perspective.
Right.
We have a different way of dealing with that. We put that critter into
a different pen,
different food chain.
Yeah.
Anyway,
we do have some alternatives now to antibiotics.
We're
kind of moving down that. In addition to antibiotics, we also have some alternatives that, you know, they're moving down.
Such as
dextrose infusions for metritis in dairy cows. I mean, you know, a lot of dairy farms will, after those cows calve, they get an antibiotic just to prevent infection. Now, you know, you can use dextrose. It's cheap. It's easy. People like it, and it works.
Okay.
And so, I think it's really important for solving the problem of antibiotic resistance is to kind of approach it from many different aspects. So, yes, we need to use our antibiotics more appropriately in a judicious fashion, but kind of having alternative therapies mixed in as well so that reducing the amount that we need to use is also great. And so kind of combining those strategies together is really kind of how it's going to be able to be resolved.
Yeah, I heard somebody tell me one time that you know, as we look at reducing antibiotic use or look at reducing herbicide use or anything else, basically what we're having to do is push up the level of management even farther than what, you know, we've got some of the best managers in the world here in the food business in the U.S., but pushing that level of management up a little bit, but also open a little bit in terms of being able to look at those kinds of things. As part of this kind of, I don't want to say campaign, but there's kind of a campaign going here.
Yeah.
As part of this discussion on antibiotic resistance, I know there's some new guidelines, at least guidelines for veterinarians, if nothing else. Producers, and it's a matter of if you don't follow these guidelines, you're going to be locked in the vet hospital for... Talk to me a little bit about what some of the guidelines that we've come out now.
Sure. 209 and 213.
209.
Guidance 209 and 213 from the FDA.
Okay. It's got an FDA number.
Yes,
even.
Absolutely.
Okay. So these guidelines, talk first off what we're doing with vets.
With the feed directive then?
Right.
Yeah, so the FDA has put together kind of a three-prong approach to work towards reducing antimicrobial resistance or maintaining the efficacy of the drugs we currently have. Kind of the third component that really goes into action, well, at the beginning of October, is the veterinary feed directive. So what we're doing, we're taking over-the-counter drugs and instead putting a veterinary label on those. So you're not going to need a prescription for antimicrobials you might want to add into feed as a preventative. We're not going to be using any more as growth-promoting antibiotics. But, you know, especially like with high-risk calves coming in, you still can get a veterinary prescription to put a antibiotic in feed for those reasons, to keep those cattle, you know, because you're going to have a couple that are starting to get sick and it'll spread through the whole pen.
Right.
So we know that can happen, but that's kind of transferring some of the stuff to the veterinarians or some education on how do you make that transition from a producer, talking with a producer that's used to using, you know, growth-promoting antibiotics. You have to transition there. That requires some education for those vets. How do you handle that situation?
Yeah,
stuff going on over here at the vet school.
Yeah, how do you handle that farmer who now says it's a conspiracy to make me pay more to the veterinarian? I mean,
that's right.
Let's face it, we've got a lot of producers. Not only are they used to doing it themselves, but we've talked about this before, all of us have. There's a lot of places where vets just aren't real available
and
for this type of thing.
Yeah, and the FDA is aware of that. I mean, that's part of their – they know that there are underserved regions, and I think, you know, this whole program can be modified. It's kind of – it's a new – this is a new FDA baby, so, you know, we're going to make this work and see where the gaps are and what needs to be done to fix these and, you know, make antibiotics available to all the producers regardless of where you live.
Okay. Let's see if we happen to have some questions on this topic before we go any further. Or do we just have people sitting in the shade?
It's nice and shady there. There's a breeze going through. It's great.
That's actually a good question. What species is this abused the most in?
I don't know if we should say, like, abused, but for antibiotic resistance, the species that are most likely to develop or harbor these bacteria that are resistant to our antibiotics are those that are housed in more animal-dense environments. So things like beef cattle are a lot less likely to be to have antibiotic resistance genes, especially at, like, the cow-calf operation. However, a dairy barn, for instance, where the animals are housed in a more concentrated area, and poultry houses and swine barns, those tend to be to have these antibiotic resistance genes at a higher level.
So it's very similar to the cold and flu that goes through the daycare.
Exactly.
Yes.
They're found pretty routinely in both poultry and dairy cattle and also swine. So,
well, we certainly we've seen those numbers come down over the time, and the goal here, of course, is to take it clear down, other than in places where we know we've had to treat for specific reasons. Next question. Okay, no questions, huh? Well, you know, now I got in trouble earlier. I'm looking very carefully, and I don't see Matt Roberts. So that means that we do have a little bit of extra time here. What have I forgotten to ask you about? You know, by this time of day, I start getting a little crispier than normal between the eyeballs.
Yeah, but you're shaded here.
Yeah, whatever. So what haven't we talked about? We need to leave these folks with some take-homes, I think.
I think the biggest take-home message for antibiotic resistance is that the veterinarian is really there to provide guidance and recommendations. And yes, the producer, that might mean that the producer might change some of their practices that they've been using. But in the long term, I think that using these antibiotics in the most effective way is going to save money in the long run.
Right.
You're not treating ineffectively and wasting that. And having that veterinarian there to consult with is really going to be the key to make sure that you're treating and preventing diseases in your livestock facilities appropriately.
I guess I'd also have to add that given the more active participation of consumers in our products, this also becomes an additional safeguard to liability concerns or actually worse than a liability concern is rejection of a load if you're talking milk, or a rejection of an animal if we're talking a slaughter animal. So that certainly even beyond what is medically responsible, we've got a market responsibility that has to come in there, too.
Yes, for sure.
All right. With that, you're going to – how bad's the bug gotten over there, the fever? How far is it spread?
I don't know.
Yeah, I was already infected.
I got infected here. Buckeye fever. Mm. It's a horrible thing. Do I win a prize just for being infected like this?
No. You have to turn this in, though, so that this person, this person 650, has a chance to win a prize.
Well, I'll let you turn that in, except for I know she did it as revenge for me. It was an FFA student, and I asked her a question instead of them asking us questions.
What did you expect, though?
I
kind of asked for it.
I always do. With that, we're going to say thanks to Demetria Mathis and thanks to Dixie Mullenkopf. And your year is done, right?
Yes.
Now you have to.
We're going to go back to the lab and do some work now.
All right.
We're going to take a break because I don't see Matt.
Oh,